Tired of the negative news and flash over substance? It's time for Today with Dr. Wendy. Dr. Wendy Patrick is a trial attorney, patriot, and PhD with a passion for people and a penchant for politics. Dr. Wendy brings you the headlines, streamlined news you can use. It's time to be informed, engaged, and entertained. Now, here's your host, Dr. Wendy Patrick.
Good evening and welcome to another edition of Today with Dr. Wendy. I'm Wendy Patrick, and my co-host Larry Dersham and I have really been following a jam-packed news week. So much going on, and we're going to get to some of the highlights in the second half. But we always like to bring you fascinating guests, and today is absolutely no exception. Larry, who do we have on the line with us?
Catherine Engelbrecht started True the Vote in 2009, a citizen-led effort to restore honor and integrity to our electoral system. True the Vote educates voters, researches the veracity of voter registries, trains and mobilizes volunteers to work in polling places, and advocates for comprehensive election code reform. True the Vote has been a leader in the effort to ensure free and fair elections in America. Their work focuses on empowering citizens to safeguard the electoral process and to protect their vote from fraud. So their voice is not diminished as we determine the direction of our government and hold our politicians accountable. Welcome to the program, Catherine.
Hey there. Thanks so much for having me.
Catherine, that is a tall order that you are involved in. I love the fact that the word true is in the title of your of what we're talking about here today. I do have to say, you know, electoral integrity is a bipartisan passion. You won't ever talk to anybody that says they don't want to make sure that elections are fair and free and accurate and all the rest of it. What we seem to have happening, and what I guess we're ramping up for again, is just sort of a difference of opinion after the fact. And I just wonder, what was it that led you to develop such a passion for election integrity?
You know, it was really by accident. Back in 2009, we a small group of us who had come out of the Tea Party days were just trying to figure out what can we do besides gather at events. Let's do something sustainable. And at that time, it was an off-year election cycle in Texas, and where I'm from, and we thought, well, okay, what about the elections? And had heard that there was a need for people to go work at the polls. And so with that one effort of going to work at the polls and seeing problems, that we thought, okay, well, these are problems that could be solved. So why don't we deconstruct these, come back with a presentation to our county, identify the problems we saw relative to data management, that we were a bunch of business professionals. Let's just turn this over to the county. And certainly they'll pick up the baton, they'll work towards solutions, and we'll move on. But that's not what happened. We walked into a political minefield, and I would have never imagined it. I really believed that election integrity was something that rose above partisanship, and that I thought it was going to be more of sort of a process-based project, and it's turned into a decade plus of fighting for voters' rights. And so what has driven this passion is because it doesn't have to be this way. Elections shouldn't be perpetually broken. Our voter rolls shouldn't be inaccurate. In private industry, companies can resolve identity, residency, and citizenship in real time, all day, every day. Why we have allowed our elections to fall to the state that they are at begs the question, does that weakness render itself useful to the people who understand how to exploit the vulnerabilities of the system and who, in fact, want to see the system remain vulnerable to the detriment of American voters? And so the passion comes from the quest to answer the question why. And it's a passion that burns to this moment. We can do better. We should be doing better. And it's more important now than ever that Americans be able to trust their elections.
Exactly. You know, Catherine, Joe Biden has opened up the borders to flood our voter rolls with illegal aliens. Certain Democratic Party-controlled large cities are actually letting or considering allowing undocumented aliens to vote in their local elections. And it's just come out that a George Soros-funded group is passing out flyers to people making their way north to illegally penetrate our borders to vote for Biden. And they're telling them that they can do that vote by just swearing or affirming that they're eligible to vote. What or who do you believe is behind this coordinated effort to destroy voting integrity in the United States?
Well, I think that it is a, I think that it is a globalist play.
Yes.
That transcends just the totalitarian regime that is the Biden administration. I think that this is far more insidious. I think that this is other countries not friendly to us, like China and Russia, licking their lips at the thought that we fall. And,
yes.
And where we find ourselves now hasn't happened overnight. This has been inch by inch by inch. The fraud of our, in our process, the fraud has been institutionalized. And so we shouldn't act surprised that we find ourselves now where we are. I've been fighting for this for over a decade. We are where we are. And now, as it's been said so often from the Obama days, you know, they will not let a crisis go to waste. In this instance, they engineered the crisis. They engineered the chaos. And now they're going to play it for all of its worth. Because if they can hold this next cycle, they will push the United States into a centralized digital bank currency that will forever change what we've ever understood as freedom in this country. We will be controlled by a social credit score, just like other countries are increasingly around the world. We will see the continued funding of both sides of wars so that the military-industrial complex continues to flourish. These are the things that are setting up. And so why wouldn't they go all in with this newly groomed voting bloc? Who is to stop them? The only answer is the American people. Only the American people can choose to stop this.
You know, Catherine, along those lines, have you noticed sort of the tide turning as far as more Americans being concerned about the border? I know that, you know, if I had asked you this a year ago, the statistics would have been wildly different than they seem to be today. There seems to be an increasingly bipartisan concern that maybe this wasn't such a good idea to let so many people in that we know nothing about. And I say that in terms of, not only are they committing crimes, are they people that we haven't been able to vet properly, but also, you know, we're not allowing those people that are here legally to live the American dream, or necessarily those that have come in illegally. They didn't come in to live in tents somewhere and not have enough access to food or health care or whatever it is. We've just heard a lot of criticism from both sides on the process that has unfolded over the last year and a half, let's say, definitely probably even maybe 2 years. Have you at all noticed that there seems to be even maybe more liberally minded individuals questioning the propriety of an open border state?
Yes, absolutely. And as sad and damaging as the situation is, I must say that it gives me such great hope to see that people are moving away from sort of party designation or thoughts about Republican and Democrat. And it's really coming down into two different camps, those who want to save the country and those who don't.
Yes.
And those who do, it doesn't matter if you're a Republican or a Democrat. It's gone too far. You can see the writing on the wall. And it's for that reason that I have great hope that we will pull ourselves back from the brink. But it is incredibly important to understand that for every American in this country right now, you are not a spectator watching this. You are in this moment of history. Get in the game.
Right.
Don't let it happen.
Yeah, Catherine, we're getting a little bit short. First of all, I want to make sure we get your website in. And then there's a 5-step process that people can get involved in the county or state they live in to help clean up the rolls. Could you give that website out? That's really important.
Just the website. We're up against a hard break.
Sure. For people to find more, you can find it at truethevote.org. Click on engage. You will see all kinds of projects that you can get involved in. And we need you. We need you now more than ever.
Right. And I'm assuming all the other instructions are on your website there. Thank you so much for joining us and for the passion that you bring to this project. It's very, very interesting. To our listeners, don't go anywhere. Don't touch that dial. We're coming right back for another half of Today with Dr. Wendy. We're back in a flash.
News cycle lowlights have no place here. You're listening to the headline highlights on Today with Dr. Wendy on The Answer San Diego.
Since 1991, the nonprofit National Law Center for Children and Families has been fighting to protect children from sexual exploitation. The National Law Center offers the latest investigative training techniques to police, probation officers, and prosecutors on fighting sexual predators and human traffickers. The NLC also offers human trafficking awareness training to members of the public. Schedule a training for your church or organization today by visiting nationallawcenter.org. That's nationallawcenter.org.
It's time for more news you can use. The headlines streamline. It's time for more Today with Dr. Wendy. Now here's your host, Dr. Wendy Patrick.
Welcome back to Today with Dr. Wendy. I'm Wendy Patrick and my co-host Larry Dersham and I didn't really need to brainstorm that much to decide what we were going to talk about for the second half. You guessed it. We are going to talk about the trial of the week. Let's just call it that, since it did start at the beginning of the week. We're talking about former President Donald Trump being on trial in Manhattan. You know, we've talked a lot on the show with between ourselves and with a variety of guests, just sort of about the historic nature of moving through the court system with a former president. Naturally, now having being in trial with a jury picked and ready for opening statements on Monday with a former president sitting in the defendant's chair, being a litigant instead of a candidate. But actually, Donald Trump is sort of doing both, at least on breaks in court. But, you know, what do you think of the jury so far, Larry? I know you and I have both been sort of interested in the process. And how do you think it's gone this week?
Well, they've paneled the 12 jurors, and then the alternates. They need six more alternates to get on to the jury. But it's interesting. You can do research and find out about the jurors. They hide their identity, as they should, as far as like describing them physically, so people won't harass them. But a number of those jurors have, I believe, kind of negative feelings towards Trump. And it's hard to find somebody, because I think Manhattan is largely a Democratic city. It's hard to find somebody neutral there. And they've got people getting their news out of the Wall Street Journal, because you can read the questions they ask the jurors and their answers and so forth, which is not totally favorable to Trump. And even TikTok, there's a number of people on that jury that go to TikTok for their news. So I know, and correct me if I'm wrong, Wendy, there's you can get, is it each side gets 10 preemptory challenges? You can just eliminate somebody for no reason at all, and then you can always eliminate them for cause, right?
Yeah, in New York, you know, different states have different rules, but in New York, yes, you have 10 peremptories for a case like this with these types of charges. But you just mentioned something I'll talk about. You and I really are always on the same wavelength. You mentioned one of the most interesting things about this jury selection that I noticed, too. I watched with great interest during the week trying to figure out, you know, who they picked. And part of the reason they seem to settle on certain jurors is, like you mentioned, they only get 10 peremptories. In other words, 10 reasons they can strike a juror, as long as they're not discriminatory reasons, where they don't have to go into great detail about why they did it. And because each of them get 10, you can't just say we're going to blow through all 10 and then hope for the best. You don't know who's coming down the line, no matter which side of a case you're on. But one of the things the jurors had in common is they seem to derive their news from multiple sources. What I noticed is that you didn't see somebody being selected that was siloed, that only watched Fox News or only watched MSNBC or only read the New York Times. What you saw is jurors were saying, look, TikTok, you are correct. I did notice that came up more often than not. I use TikTok. I use Google. I watch MSNBC. And then I also watch Fox News. So when you're looking at jurors that have really gained a lot of different kinds of information and been exposed to so many different viewpoints, you can see how both sides would concede. Maybe this isn't the best juror in the world. However, this is somebody that at least can going to be open-minded enough that they'll be able to be fair and impartial. Remember, the key here is not to find anybody that hasn't heard anything about this case, but somebody that, notwithstanding what they've heard about the case, can still judge the case based not on what they heard on the news, but what comes out of the witness stand in the courtroom.
When you consider that he's in multiple, this is just one of the criminal trials. He's in three other criminal trials, plus that one that was just resolved. It'll be appealed, of course, the civil trial with Letitia James. Well, Letitia James, she was the Attorney General for New York. She was an elected Democrat, and she kind of campaigned on that she's going to look into Trump and try to go after him. And then Alvin Bragg is also an elected district attorney for Manhattan. He campaigned, and there's statements you can pull where he was going to try to indict Trump. So where's the fairness there? And then going down to Georgia, Fonnie, I forget her last name right now, Willis, is it Fonnie Willis? She's an elected Democrat too. And just the coordination of all this, and this is so amazing, Wendy. So how do you turn a misdemeanor falsifying records, which is it's a misdemeanor in New York law, into a felony? How do they do that? Well, they're basically saying that this manipulation of the records can be attached to his campaign finance violation. Well, both the Department of Justice, the Federal Department of Justice under Merrick Garland, and the Federal Election Commission determined that he did not violate any campaign problem with this supposed hush money payment. Yet, in New York, they're trying to bootstrap that misdemeanor up into a felony that could put him in prison for, experts are saying, at least 4 years with probation too. Plus, they're throwing him off the election trail. If that is not coordinated election interference, I don't know what is.
Well, Larry, maybe you can pro hoc vice into New York and Manhattan and make that argument. They've made all of those procedural arguments. This trial is about the charges that have been presented to the jury. And no doubt the results of some of those collateral arguments and even the procedural ones, is it proper to have to do the bootstrapping, as you say? Is it proper to make these felonies? Shouldn't they just be bookkeeping errors? Remember, the difference here is that they're charged with wrongful intent, which makes it different than somebody making a mistake if they're entering, were these legal fees? Obviously, they're saying they're hush money. They're not legal fees. It wasn't for legal work. But this jury is only going to be deciding the crimes that have been charged. And most of them are unaware with the procedural arguments that have been made. And no doubt it will continue to be made. And one thing we're really interested in watching on Monday is how are each one of these sides going to sort of lay out the roadmap for what they expect the evidence is going to show, especially how are those defense attorneys going to do it? Because for the prosecution, you know, they have their theory of the case. They're going to lay it out. But the defense may go maybe a different direction based on whatever they sort of strategize over the weekend. Now, why might that change? Part of the reason is when you have a case that's highly litigated, there's many issues that come up after a trial starts. It may take some twists and turns that are unanticipated at the time of opening statement. And that's tricky. And both sides sort of have to roll with those punches. And the judge will no doubt be on board with this, too. And just looking at the reality of this is historic. It's unprecedented. And that, Larry, makes it unpredictable in the sense that we just are not 100% sure about what's going to happen. Remember, we don't even know who the witnesses are going to be on Monday.
Exactly. Well, apparently, Stephanie Clifford, who goes by the screen name of Stormy Daniels, is supposed to be a key witness, but she ignored the subpoena that was issued by the defense. And I think she's been properly served anyhow. So hopefully she's going to be one of the witnesses there. I mean, she's the one that's kind of the basis of this whole case. And do you know that the judge did not even dismiss himself. He was supposed to recuse himself because his daughter is representing a number of Democrats and so forth. And it just like it has just the air of unfairness to me. And the gag order, the fact that he is gagged and he can't talk back, even though Michael Cohen, his former attorney, is saying all kinds of things about Trump, as is Stormy Daniels, yet he can't respond or with a threat of legal sanctions going against him. So it's like the whole deck is stacked against him. And if I just hope that people see the fairness of it, even if you don't like him personally for whatever reason, there is, in my opinion, no fairness in this trial.
Well, remember that part of the challenge of selecting jurors is finding jurors that can listen to the facts presented in the courtroom and not be swayed by other arguments made by other commentators or other voices or opinions about, as you were saying, is it fair? Is it, you know, is the fact that it's unprecedented a reason the jury should nullify? They're not allowed to pay attention to any of that. Now, easier said than done. I mean, it's hard to even walk into a store without some news report or somebody talking about something somewhere. But they are probably really going to take their task seriously. You know, one of the jurors that was excused shared what a almost larger than life surreal experience it had been to be summoned to a courtroom and walk in and see Donald Trump sitting there. I mean, the men and women that have bravely stepped up to take this task seriously are going to do exactly that. They're going to divorce their feelings from whether or not it's fair and what, you know, should this case have been brought, and just do what's being asked of them. And I know somebody's probably listening saying, you know, you are the eternal optimist. And I guess I am. Remember, you're the cloud on the silver lining, Larry. But I am just hopeful that, like so many other juries, and I have ultimate faith in the system, they'll step up and they'll do their jobs, which is to put passion and prejudice aside and judge the facts as they come out. And then after that, you know, if the former president is convicted, then I'm sure there'll be an appeal. And by the way, Larry, this case is going to be, even if it is a conviction, the appeal will go past November. So he will still be able to run for president. He'll probably be glad it's over because he can get back onto the campaign trail, regardless of what the jury decides.
No kidding. You know that the judges are requiring him to be in court every day the court is in session. It's not in session on Wednesday, but every other day. This may even cause him to miss his son's graduation on May 17th this year. You can't replicate that. You can't duplicate missing your child's graduation from high school. So on so many levels, in my opinion, again, this is my opinion, this is an unfair trial. But yeah, the jury hopefully are going to do their job, even though they may have feelings about Trump that are not favorable. I hope they do their job.
And you know, Trump, the former president, has also sort of made this a courtroom campaign. You know, he has to abide by the gag order. There's going to be a hearing next week. They're going to litigate the parameters of it and whether or not he violated it. When they do that, though, you know, it's also going to probably be in connection with trying to find a break to fit that motion in, because we have just hit the ground running here. I mean, for all the talk about, oh, it's going to take weeks to pick a jury, fasten your seatbelts. The roller coaster ride has begun. So we will probably pick this up and talk a little bit more about it next week. But we want to thank our listeners for joining us again this Saturday night. You're listening to Today with Dr. Wendy. Larry Dersham, my co-host, and I want to wish you a wonderful week. God bless you, and we'll see you right back here next Saturday night, 6 p.m. Have a good one.
Thank you for joining us for Today with Dr. Wendy. You can learn more about Dr. Wendy and how to become a guest or sponsor of the show by visiting WendyPatrickPhD.com. That's WendyPatrickPhD.com. Tune in every week at this same time as Dr. Wendy will engage and inspire you with an upbeat viewpoint on the highlights of the day. This has been Today with Dr. Wendy on The Answer San Diego.
Since 1991, the nonprofit National Law Center for Children and Families has been fighting to protect children from sexual exploitation. The National Law Center offers the latest investigative training techniques to police, probation officers, and prosecutors on fighting sexual predators and human traffickers. The NLC also offers human trafficking awareness training to members of the public. Schedule a training for your church or organization today by visiting nationallawcenter.org. That's nationallawcenter.org.